This is the Producers Podcast,
featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover.
TV, radio, film, and more.
In-depth interviews and industry insights, putting you on the inside.
Learn more at ryandreen.com.
The Producers Podcast
with Ryan Dreen.
All right, here we are, Producers Podcast. Thank you so much for checking in. I have Mark Peoples as the guest today. Mark, if you're not aware of the name, although I think he's a pretty big name in the voiceover industry, but if you're not aware, definitely, you know, big-time voice actor. He has a pretty balanced workload from television to radio. He does a lot of radio imaging and a lot of local television affiliate work. He does some commercial work. He also does some national promo work, movie trailers. I would recommend hitting his website, markpeoples.com. It's spelled P-E-E-P-L-E-S, markpeoples.com. You can hear a lot more demo audio. He has video demos there, also links to his social networks, everything right there on his website. And I'm also pushing his website because he is going to be updating that at some point. So I'd like people to go check that out when it happens. So go connect with the guy. Hell of a nice guy. He's based out of Alabama. He used to be in one of the larger markets in Atlanta. He went back home and has plenty of success there. So we get into the geography of the business as well. I should note, I guess, I don't know if it's a big deal. I don't remember how much we talked about it, but we recorded this right before the radio summit in Burbank. And I mean like the day before, late. So hours before he was flying away. And I'm producing this during the radio summit, but as I'm sticking to my schedule, it will be pushed out to the world on the 1st of April after the radio summit. Again, I don't remember what we talked about in the interview, but if that time frame is weird to you, that's why it is weird. Oh, and for the record, that's me, I am extremely jealous because I love going to the radio summit because it is filled with voice actors and imaging producers, all the kinds of folks I like to hang out with. I had a transaction to tend to and other work-related crap. I realize that sounded weird. Transaction like a house, not like drugs or, I don't know, something else nefarious. Anyway, just know that, no, I'm not hashtag blessed or humbled or any of that. No, I'm hashtag jealous. It's a great conference, especially for us, and I wasn't able to go. Oh, well, there's always next year. So there we have it. That's your intro today. I ain't recording it again. Before I get to the interview, though, I would like to politely request you subscribe and rate this podcast. I really only say that because when I listen to other podcasts, the professionals that do this stuff always say that. They say it a lot of times. I say it once. Either way, no, I do know the realities of metrics and, you know, getting this thing out in front of more people. I would be very grateful if you would take the time and rate and or review this on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That would make me oh so giddy. Now we get to the guest. It's the one and the only Mark Peoples.
It's the place everyone wants to be. With a set as famous as the guests, 25 amazing years of television now come to an end. Celebrate with newsmakers old and new and unforgettable fan favorites as CNN counts down to the final live hour. In this arena, the world's greatest warriors come to battle.
No scripts, no lines, just heart-stopping excitement. The NBA is on TNT and TBS.
How you doing?
102.7 KISS FM, high five at five.
Five.
Number two. Allow me to make you a balloon animal. Ta-da! It's a snake sitting on a couple of walnuts. Oh. Monster Ball Tour. So the boss says, make it easier to listen to 102.9 The Hog. So I says, no commercials, weekdays after Bob and Brian till noon. That's easy.
All right, and I'm going to take a wild guess that you know that voice. If you're listening to this podcast, you definitely know that voice. But that voice is Mark Peoples. Hey, Mark, voice artist extraordinaire. Thanks for joining me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, hi. How are you, Ryan?
There it is. Oh, that's the real voice, right? Everything else is a put on.
Listen, man, I'm going to tell you, it happens so much. I know this question is coming, but maybe I shouldn't get ahead of you here. But
yeah, that's fine.
My clients, I say, well, why is he in Alabama? Well, so I have to go through the story, you know. And it's always quite entertaining because, you know, hey, it's strange when you work for a major network, you do some work, and the producer's like, where are you? Say, you know, I'm in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. A lot of times that's all you have to say. People know where Muscle Shoals is. I mean, it's like the Rolling Stones frequented this place. I mean, and so many other big names. Aretha Franklin. It's a huge music town, man. We love it. But people outside of, you know, it's just, why?
Yeah, well, that was actually my third question. I was going to bring that up real early here.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great. And we will get to that because I want to hear more about kind of you had some regional transition or geographical transitioning in your career. But I wanted to start with this question before we kind of get into the background. Was there a moment or, you know, something that sort of popped and made you go, oh, I'm going to talk for a living? Did that happen at some point in your life?
Well, I'll tell you what happened, and I there's no way to really make a short story out of this, and it's, man, my kids, it's very flattering. My kids will actually come to me and say, Dad, you know, every once in a while, they want to know, how did you start doing what you're doing? I mean, they've known this all of their life. This is what they've known, because, well, let's see, I was in radio when, you know, I started in radio in 86. And they hired me at Big River Broadcasting, which is WQLT here locally. Huge, huge tower, 100,000 watt station. And they're still there. They're still owned. Sam Phillips owned the station. And yes, it's the same Sam Phillips who discovered Elvis Presley, you know, Sun Studios out of Memphis. And his son Jerry owns it now. And I'm actually doing the voice work for their country station, Kix 96. So it's nice to be back home doing some voiceover. So anyway, long story long, here we go. Back to 1986. Man, I hated how I sounded. My dad was a radio vet from the 50s and 60s at various stations in Jacksonville, Florida, and Atlanta, Georgia. And he says, son, you need to do radio. Yeah, right. Okay. Why and how? Well, he says, you just need to record something. Well, my dad was, he was, you know how it is. You get into broadcasting, it's in your blood. You can't have some kind of a witch doctor bleed it out of you. It's there.
Yeah.
And so he had a full radio station. It was a broadcast radio station in the basement, you know, and I would go down there and play on this thing, and I recorded an air check, and all I did was read the newspaper. And they hired me. I remember my first shift was on a Sunday morning, and I was just a kid, you know, and I ran syndication. I had one air that I was one hour that I was live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just 1 hour, man. That was my hour of fame. I was I think I was 14 at the time. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. It was you know, you have to get into. I think if I were to go back into radio right now and open the mic, I would be like, I'm, you know, I'm trying this little experiment we'll get into later, but with an internet broadcast, and that should be fun. But yeah, I remember CD players were brand new. It was a brand new thing. Even the voice guy for the station, it was they would write liners and say, "And now from compact laser disc," you know, and. It was actually a thing. I mean, it was a marketing thing, you know. And
yeah, right.
Man, I was in a very awkward position the morning routine, and there was a very strategically located speaker right above the toilet in the bathroom. It was an air monitor speaker, and it went silent. And I'm like, oh God. You know, so I'm jumping up and trying to get back in there as quickly as I can. And I walked in, and they had three, at the time, they weren't the CD cart decks. These were like the first ones that were available, and they looked consumer grade to me. You know, like if you bought a set top, you know, kind of thing. And there were three stacked.
Yeah, with the tray that opens up?
Yeah, yeah, there were three of them stacked on top of each other. And I walked in. And it was like they were opening and closing by themselves, and of course it was the Century 21 discs, And, of course, there was the hit discs where they've got multiple formats on there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
track yeah. 1 through 5 might be country and then, you know, whatever. And so it's playing. We were a AC top 40 station, and it's playing country and then some hard stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God. So the general manager of the station, the big red light started going off. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
God. Oh, it was bad. It was bad. Very bad. So those were the early days in radio, and I did that up until, I would say, let's see, when did I do my first voiceover job? It's been a long time ago. Oh, yeah, it was in December of 94. I'm having a look at some notes here. December of 94, we were living in Atlanta, and that's where it really started.
What was the, was there like a momentous occasion? I mean, were you doing radio in Atlanta, and then you found your way into voice over there, or did you know how did that little transition happen?
No, actually, I got tired of moving all over the country because I loved radio, but at the time, you know, it was getting that point where those big, glamorous, large market jobs, they were getting even smaller as far as the opportunity goes, and so yeah. If radio was going to be your career, as I'm sure it is now, I mean, you stick with a very stable medium market to small market station group, or you just move all the time. And
yeah.
We were starting a family. You know, the kids were coming, and we just, I needed a career. I needed a career change, but I knew I could do something, but it probably was not going to be my passion, which was radio at the time. So
mm-hmm.
we moved to Atlanta, good job market, you know, and I say, you know what I'd really love to do? I would love to do, because my favorite thing was audio production. Man, I can get lost in audio production. It is
yeah.
so much fun. And I said, I'm gonna try and apply with a recording studio or something. So I went basically door to door with, you know, filling out resumes or filling out applications. And mm-hmm. There's one little studio on Spring Street in downtown Atlanta. I was in the lobby talking with the manager of the studio, and he was being nice, giving me that, you know, the typical, well, just leave your resume and fill out an application, and if something comes open, we'll get in touch with you, and thanks for stopping by. Well, all of a sudden, this, in my mind's eye, I can picture Marie from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
This sweet little old lady walks out of this office, and she walks up to me, and she says, "Hon, I couldn't help but overhear your conversation." She says, "You don't want to do what these flunkies are doing." She said, "You need to be in voiceover."
Mm-hmm.
Well, what? Well, like, wow. Thank you so much, man. That was a compliment. And before I could really respond with anything articulate, she says, "Tell you what, my son works for Turner, and you come in Friday, I'm going to have him produce your demo tape for free."
Wow.
I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I was at the right place at the right time, and she got flowers for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Had to explain the lipstick wow. marks on my cheek when I came home, but, you know, hey.
I guess. Yeah, they're worth it, though.
Very much so.
So you go to Turner, get that demo cut. Does that mean you actually do work for Turner right out of the gate, too?
No, her son worked for Turner. He actually was doing
yeah,
some...
Yeah, no, but I figured... Yeah, like, did he say, oh, yeah, you know, you actually are legit. Like, you know, I'm thinking your first voiceover gig was something for Turner or something.
He did. He did a... I believe, now I don't know for sure, but I really believe that he was, I know his mom was, the lady I was speaking of, somebody out there might remember her and remember her very well and affectionately. Her name was Meiji Kinder, and her son's name was Jeff, and he did a lot of custom music and that sort of thing and for
okay.
Turner and Turner Films, Turner
okay.
Broadcasting.
Yeah, that's great. So you're in Atlanta, and that's where you basically start your voiceover career.
Yes.
And what are the first steps to, I guess, earn an income that, you know, doesn't that puts food on the table, that doesn't put you on the street?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. What I did when I first started was I was in a good market. You know, Atlanta is an excellent voice.
It's a great media market.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so what I did was I just said, hey, you cast a bigger net, you catch more fish. And so I signed non-exclusive contracts with about 10 or 15 agencies in Atlanta. And so I knew I was at every what they called cattle call audition. And you've seen the lines where the kids, you know, the new iPhone comes out and they camp out and they stand in line outside Best Buy or whatever. That's what a lot of these were. And you walk into a little room and they got a, you know, a folding table and you read and they say, okay, get out of here. Next one. So it really is. It's about exposure. You really want to be in front of as many people as you can.
What kind of stuff were you booking early on? You know, what type of work? I mean, I can hear your voice now. I know you do a lot of, I mean, look, you got a big voice. There's, you know, well, we can't hide from it.
Well, I didn't have the big voice back then.
Yeah, so back then, the sound effects, we got sound effects too.
I'm sorry about the demo. I had one of my air checks loaded, but no. I actually listened to some of my own demos back then, and I think, oh my God, why did they hire me? It which sounded awful. Like if I were the creative director, I'd say, "Hey, come here, guys, check out this submission we just got today." Yeah. It's terrible, but no, we actually got some good stuff. It was really awesome, man. I think the first thing, and I might get these slightly out of order, but I think the very first thing is it was closed circuit sort of broadcasting for this chain of stores that were located inside airports called W.H. Smith. And, yeah, we would go into an Atlanta studio and record, you know, maybe once a month. And, of course, you know, back then it's your first job. If you want to hear your stuff, you're like, oh, man, I just recorded this. I can't wait to see what it sounds like. I got to fly somewhere, you know. That's the only place.
Yeah.
So then the other thing, we did some Ford commercials there in Atlanta, and Six Flags. But the biggest one was, wow, I auditioned for this through Atlanta Models and Talent. And back then I had two things. We had a pager. It was a numeric pager. And, you know, it was, do you remember this these days? Where you would tell your family members, you know, if it's an emergency, just send me a page me with the numbers 911 after the telephone number.
Right.
Because there was no text messaging. So I had the pager, and I had this giant flip phone. And it was like you extended the antenna on it. And we're riding around, and the audition had been submitted, and all of a sudden I recognized the number being from my agency. And I got on the phone as fast as I could, found out that we had been selected to be the voice of the NBA on TNT and TBS for the 95-96 season. Amazing.
Oh, wow.
It's beautiful.
Was that one of those jobs, you know, this will happen, you work at it, you get paid, but you kind of get the one gig that catapults the rest. Was that one of those for you?
Man, here's a funny story, and Lisa Marber is going to love this because, you know, if she listens, she's going to get the inside scoop probably for the first time since it happened, and this was back in, you know, summer of 96. I actually thought you're exactly what you just asked. I thought, you know, this is a high-profile job. I'm out there. People are going to hear me, and the career has started. I mean, we're ready to pop the top on his champagne bottles, about five or six of them. And, man, we did the season, and it came and went, nothing. And then they rehired me for the postseason voiceover, which lasted really just 2 weeks. It was just about four sessions. And then that ended, and I'm like, nothing happened. Oh, my God. I mean, it was like a gut punch. I was like, well, I guess that was it. Yeah, we did voiceover for a little while, and well, let's see, what do we do now?
Now
maybe
what?
Auto mechanics?
Oh gosh, carpentry? I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, plumbing? I don't know. But I got this strange call. Things happen when you're not expecting them to happen. They really do. Uh-huh. I mean, that's when the good stuff. It's like they say the old saying, you know, a watched pot never boils.
Yeah.
The good stuff always happens when you're not expecting it. It's like you get the best auditions and the best gigs when you're in the middle of your vacation.
Yeah.
Or something. Yep. And it's always... So I get this phone call out of the blue, and it's my contact at Turner. And she says, Mark, it's Shannon at Turner, and just wanted to make sure before I... somebody's trying to get in touch with you from Don Buchwald and Associates, and I just wanted to make sure it was okay to give them your number. Well, I'm like, why, hell yes, please.
Right.
Because everybody knew who they were. Everybody knew, you know, who the agency was. I mean, that was one of those instantaneous things. And I would just about bet that if before that date I had sent them a demo, I would have not gotten a response back. So they apparently had heard it. And so anyway, Lisa Marber calls me. And she says, we've heard your stuff on Turner, and we'd really like to sign you at the agency. Man, this stuff, you have to understand, all of this happened in like 6 months.
And yeah, it sounds like it.
I didn't really have a clue what I was doing. I just had people that took me under their wing that knew. And so I just felt like a sort of a ping pong ball, just bouncing around saying, okay, all right, fine, I'll do it, you know. And it was, I remember I was actually quite terrified because it was too much to digest too quickly for a young, inexperienced guy.
Yeah, I'll ask a question like this maybe later, but if you could go back at the time, what are some of the things you would have told yourself to maybe more better prepare yourself or at least to just allow you to handle the situation better? Is there anything you would, you know, advice you'd go give yourself?
Well, I think, you know, honestly, looking back, because hindsight is 2020, and looking back, I think as far as, you know, how I dealt with the agency and everything, I think I did a really good job. But as far as, you know, my early days in voiceover, if that's what you're alluding to, I would say...
Yeah, anything, yeah.
I would say I spent, you know, let's see, 86 to... I'm not doing math now. My brain is scattered from the rest of the day has been nuts today.
Right.
But anyway, I spent, you know, I guess about 11 years all total in radio. And I think that I'm grateful because I love radio and I can't get it out of my system, but I think that really hurt me in voiceover because especially the time, you know, the time frame that I was in radio because what they call it, the boss radio, you weren't really conversational on the air. You were an announcer, man. And it's very tough to do professional voiceover. Well, you can't. I mean, if you're an announcer, I mean, you just forget it.
Yeah, it's kind of that radio stench that people will talk about. It's hard to shed it.
Yeah, and Sunday.
And you were doing radio in an era where they really, really wanted you to be, like you just said, a big voice announcer.
That's right.
You're not a regular person.
Exactly. And in the two formats, they sort of lended themselves to that sort of straying from the path, voiceover-wise, like CHR. Mm-hmm. CHR and rock. Man, you got to be a boss if you're a radio DJ in the 80s doing rock or CHR. You know, hey.
Well, we'll probably, you know, still get a few more stories, I'm assuming, as we move through the career here. But let's go back to the present, just to hear about your daily workloads. You know, I think, well, there's a lot of avenues that people will know you from, but, you know, station announcer, you do a lot of TV promo work. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you tell me, but what's your daily workload look like now?
Well, I was talking to, it's funny, I was talking to a good friend of mine in the business the other day who profaned me wildly when I told him, I said, man, I've only done 3 sessions today. He said, you what? You know, it's, I give up trying to predict what any of my days are going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm just being funny here really, but it almost feels like that all of my stations... They have this secret society, and I think they all have a little summit. They get together on gotomeeting.com, and they say, everybody hold off on Wednesday. Let's all send him our crap on Thursday. At exactly, is everybody's watch synchronized? Okay, go. And it's, man, I'm telling you, that's the way it is.
And what about when you go out of town? I know you're heading out to Burbank, right? Yes. I'm not speaking out of turn by saying you're heading over to the Worldwide Radio Summit. This will actually post possibly just as the summit has ended, but it doesn't matter. What about the day before you go out of town? That's usually a big day for work, isn't it?
The day before I go out of town, let's see, after this, I think what I'm going to do is 2 days before I go out of town is I am just going to request some sort of heavy sleep medication. Take an extra day off and go into a coma and just have my wife wake me up in time to get to the plane. That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's insane.
There you go.
Because if it can go wrong, Murphy's Law, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. I'm changing Murphy's Law a little bit. It will go wrong the day before you go on a trip. That's it.
The day before you go on a trip.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. That's great. What about the quantity or I'm sorry, like percentages of what you do? I don't really know. I know you do some commercial work, but if I'm guessing, you're doing a lot more affiliate work and radio imaging than anything else. But tell me I'm wrong, or tell me what else you're into, and kind of what are the percentages like these days for your workload?
You know, it's sort of mainly what I do is TV affiliate and radio, and it kind of they fluctuate. It's like sometimes you've got, you know, four or five more radio than TV, and sometimes you've got four or five more TV than radio, and it tends to fluctuate. So I would say it's pretty close, but I think right now I am doing more TV affiliate than I am radio.
And I'd say a lot of people, you know, now that they heard some of your demo, maybe they didn't know that Mark Peoples was that guy they hear on their local station all the time, you know, but now they do. And I played some of your demo work, obviously, to kick off the show. You have a lot more on your website. And in fact, we'll get to the technology here in a bit because you are doing some big updates soon. But what else are you into, or maybe what else would you like to be into besides more of the announcer side of the work?
Well, I'll tell you this, and right before I answer that, there was something you said. I would like to find the guy that causes me to get these phone calls from friends and family all over the country. I know you just cut this spot last week. I just heard you on the radio out here in Cheyenne or wherever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, not me. Oh, yes, it is you. I've known you for 10 years, and it's you. No, if you find the guy, kill him for me. I mean, that's I don't need
he's taking that work, obviously.
Yes, I mean, because you bastard. I mean, it's my work. But no, what I would like to get into is really a little bit of every. I want to keep doing what I do. It is enjoyable. I don't like the mechanics of, you know, the actually running the business. And I'm sure we'll get into this when I discuss the reasoning for this little organization or brotherhood that we're talking about. But it's a fun job, but I really, really enjoy working with a producer on a phone patch or, you know, used to in the good old days in ISD inline, because you get real-time feedback. And, you know, because the producer who's writing the copy and who's charged with finding or working with the voice guy, he's already got it in his head what he wants it to sound like, especially the copywriter. If he wrote the copy, then it's even more his baby, her baby.
Right.
And I think that those are the best times because, you know, I'm not a mind reader. I mean, that's why the auditions, you know, I mean, hey, you just do the audition. There might be 20 ways to read it, but you're not going to give them 20 takes. And if you do the wrong take, they're going to say, yeah, he might not be able to do what we want him to do. And just trash that one.
Yeah.
But it's so much more rewarding to work with these really, really creative people because they, if you step outside of their expectation just this much, they say, oh, no, pull it back this way just a little bit. And I know that I've made them happy and they're happy. So I love it. Mm-hmm. I think as far as the genre, movie trailers are a lot of fun. And we've done a couple of those. But yeah, I would say if we do anything, radio is, it's all fun, man. I just want to be able to work with the producers more on an individual basis.
And you talked about being, you know, being directed there. At some point in time, you were in Atlanta, and you and I already talked about this, but you decided, nah, think it's time to go back home. It's kind of how you said it. Yeah. So I'm assuming it'd be very, very rare where you are now to actually go and do a live session in a studio.
Yeah, this is not a real big voiceover town. It's I mean, we have tons of recording studios everywhere. There's a recording studio on just about every block. I mean, they're everywhere. You got Fame, you got Wishbone, you got Jimmy Nutt's got a studio now, or did just up to. I mean, my finger's not totally on the pulse of music recording, but I got a lot of friends in the business here locally, and it's huge. But nothing really in voiceover, so no. I mean, it's you got to have your own studio if you're remotely located, and this is what you want to do.
And you know, when you were in Atlanta and you were started out, obviously you were doing big work for Turner. You got the big, you know, the one of the greatest agents on planet Earth, who also happens to be mine, Lisa. You know, you say, all right, I'm going back to Muscle Shoals.
So
going
what
back
are you
to Alabama.
Expecting? You're looking for a gig, aren't you?
No.
Okay, grab some tissue.
No, I'm saying
wipe.
You for those people that think maybe you got to be in New York or LA to get the work, or you know, I have different opinions I've heard on this. But did you feel any pushback? Did you feel like you missed out on anything? You know, did you lose work over it?
It was actually, we were just getting into, of course, you know, I mean, they told me, you've got to have an ISDN box, you've got to have it. And of course, you know, these are all new things to me. I didn't know what ISDN was. But no, it didn't impact me really. Except for, because everything I did, you know, the agency really built me up very quickly in the TV affiliate and area. So there wasn't any real need. I think it's just like major network stuff that on occasion requires a body in place. But ISDN was the thing. And so as long as you had an ISDN connection, you were fine. That was the only problem for me because
that's what I was going to say. Tell that story. Getting that done in where you lived.
Well, it was terrible because, you know, this was, it's Northwest Alabama. Okay. It's not a suburb.
Oh, yeah,
a big market. Yeah, please don't send that in my copy in the morning. Anyway,
easy for you to say. Yeah.
So, we had to back then. There was like one ISDN installation guy that worked all of the Northwest Alabama. I mean, it's, if you put break Alabama into four parts, I mean, he was Northwest, and you had to be within so many feet. And I can't remember what that, you know, number was of a main box. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't tell me anything. I don't know where the box is, number one. And so they had to, I would have to give them a phone number of an office building or whatever, and they would have to check in their records to see if it would be available. So, yeah, I had to have my studio in town. And had to get some office space to do that. Couldn't work out of my home at the time.
And at some point that changed. The technology started to catch up even in Northwest Alabama. And do you still have an ISDN line in the home studio now? I think you told me you do, but you don't really need to use it that much anymore.
Well, I don't have an ISDN line. I have an ISDN box. Okay. I've got a Telo Zephyr 9202, the 9202, you know. And I thought the other day, you know, I've got this new IPDTL subscription, and I actually have a Los Angeles ISDN number now. So, you know, I'll bet you there are still some, you know, TV stations. I could sell that Zephyr. Maybe, you know, make some cash. It was funny, man. I was really just curious because it is a dinosaur. And so I look online, and people are so, they can't sell them. They're trying to sell them for $30, and they can't sell them. I paid $6,600 for the damn thing. But yeah.
I was going to say a $5,000 paperweight, really heavy paperweight, but even more. Yeah.
Well, listen, man, the funniest thing was I remember it was every once in a while, you know, at least once or twice a year for the last, I mean, well, the last time I did an ISDN hookup prior to a few months ago was in 07. It was 2007, so I mean, doing the math here, that's a long time ago to not need ISDN. I mean, I've done network stuff, and everybody's MP3 now. So I just called, but the agency would call every once in a while and say, you got to have an ISD in line to do this. So there was an audition that looked really hot for us, and so I thought, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to let the agency book this and then call me and me screw it up for everybody by saying, oh, well, I didn't think I was going to get it, so I didn't get ISD in. So I called AT&T, and of course they do as they always do. They transferred me overseas, and I told them what I wanted, and she put me on hold for about 20 or 30 minutes, comes back and says, sir, I've looked, and I've even checked with my supervisor, and we can't find that channel available on your lineup.
Oh, ISDN, ISD network?
Dude, I really didn't know how to respond. I had to really take some time to process this, and I was so, I couldn't even laugh. And I think the first thing I said to her is, ma'am, it's not a channel or a network. It's a service. It's like a phone line, and
it's a freaking wire.
So anyway, I would say it's good and bad that we've gotten away from ISDN. The good thing is, hey, it's more convenient. If you had a way to have great acoustics and park your ass on a beach somewhere, you could do anything. I was at a condo in Perdido Key, and in the closet, back then as the portable studios were kind of big then,
mm-hmm.
I recorded all of the final farewell VO for Larry King in the closet of a condo in Perdido Key, Florida. So
that's great.
So conceivably, you can be anywhere, but it's no longer personal, man. We are just names and email addresses. That's all we are.
Yeah, that's tough. Man, I don't want to run out of time here and get into some of this, but let's stay on technology. First, let's talk about your mic chain, in fact.
Okay.
You had been pretty locked into something, specifically your microphone, for a while, but then you kind of made some changes. Anyway, tell people what it is you like, what you use, what you've tried, and people love hearing about that stuff.
Well, I'm very picky. I'm very, very picky, and I think just about everybody else is. I mean, because every single one of us, we all want to sound the best we can, and you always are your own worst critic. But I have tried so many microphones, and I'm talking to you now on a Neumann TLM-49, and it sounds okay, but the thing is, I noticed that even, it's new, I mean, within the last month or so, I've noticed that even at 8 inches away with a double-paned pop screen, it's still so pressure-sensitive, it sounds like I'm popping. And so I have to pull P's and B's and things like that. It's a little more difficult.
And that's about a $1,600 mic-ish?
Yeah.
Yes. And so I found it interesting. Now, if you could tell everybody what you had been using that you like a lot and that you might even go back to.
I started out, and it's funny, I end up with a Neumann. There are two mics, and I'll be very quick here. The first one I started with was an Audio-Technica 4033. And I bought that with the proceeds of the NBA contract from 95-96. And when we did the postseason, I went in and I was just talking with the studio guy and Brian Kreider, who was one of the head producers for Turner, that was working with me. And so we had a three-person conversation going on here, and he let the cat out of the bag how much he had paid for a Neumann microphone that was in the mic booth. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, please. Okay. And I said, man, why? Because my microphone is...
why?
My microphone sounds that good. Ah, God, I still don't know. If I were to run into the guy... I think I saw him in Promax in 97 in Toronto. And he didn't hate me, but I was convinced that he would hate me because the Brian Kreider, he says, tell you what, bring your mic in Thursday and we'll try it out. I brought my mic in. All of the Turner folks from then on out, all the NBA, they wanted me to bring my microphone to record on because they agreed it sounded as good or better. They thought it sounded better, I guess, than the Neumann.
Yeah, and it, few hundred dollars. Like, we're talking hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, as paid
thousands of dollars.
Paid $500 for the AT-4033 at the time. It was $500 and change. And the Neumann, yeah. I remember, he had the big sucker. You know, I mean, he was like, give me the best you got. I mean, I guess that's what he did. So I used that mic for years. And back in 2010, I'm a gearhead. I'm just a gearhead. Go ahead and admit it. All you other guys are, too. Everybody in the business.
Yeah.
You got to have...
plenty of them.
Man, I built this huge rack cabinet. I mean, I've got... it's like I'm going through storage trying to... what would look good in the rack? You know, I got the gearhead, man. I mean, I don't care if I ever use it. It's just, look how full my rack is. Check it out, man. No. So I wanted to change. I said, let me try some, but I wouldn't know where to start. I said, I definitely don't feel like it's necessary to get a really expensive microphone. So I got, oh God, I can't remember all of them. It's a little blue, it's AKG blue mic. Not blue as in a brand name blue, but.
Right.
Got an AKG. I got the 4033. I got a Rode mic, and I just decided I'm going to do a blind taste test with my clients, a couple of them. And I got 10 people who said, you know, okay, I'll check it out. And so I read, you know, a couple of lines with each microphone, and I sent them the file. Unanimously, I mean, down to one person chose a different microphone. Every single one of them said the Shure KSM-27.
Yeah, there it is.
Wow. All right, then. So
and that's like a few hundred bucks.
Yeah, I think it's this one here, the one I actually use or have been using for the last couple of years in my main chain, is a KSM-27. And recently when I went to look, I've noticed that they're just SM-27s now that I see available. But it's the same one.
Yeah.
I use a SM-27 in my mobile studio.
Yeah, we were talking about this, obviously, beforehand, was why I wanted to tell people. Because people do get sort of locked into the, oh, I got to get myself the $3,000 Neumann, or, you know, I have to use the $1,000 416, which I happen to love. Everybody, the 416s are lousy. Everybody's got one. But then I got an AKG, the 214. It was, I don't know how much, $400 or $500, I can't remember, but great microphone. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
So, you know... it's what sound, it what matches with you and what sounds good. It doesn't, you know, sometimes price point isn't exactly the most important thing.
Man, I can't, I can't make decisions like that on myself, on my own. I had to call the boss up here, and so many people, I mean, I don't go on a business trip without Monica, so she really has gotten into the business, and she knows people, and she knows exactly what the hell's going on, and she keeps me straight, and I trust her judgment on just about everything. I said, please, will you sit over here and let me try each one of these mics out? Just don't even look at which one's, you know, plugged in.
Right.
And she said, because I actually was looking for an excuse to get rid of the 49 here. I really was looking for an excuse because, to me, the quality difference between this and the KSM-27 or the Shure mic, it's marginal at best, but yet it's, let's see, it's, I mean, it's about five, better than five times the price. And so she said, oh no, that mic right there. She said, she used the word presence. She said, it sounds like you're here. It doesn't sound artificial.
That's the Neumann. Yeah. She liked the Neumann.
Yeah. She said the Shure sounded slightly artificial in comparison.
Yeah, so what else do you put on your mic chain? Do you have, I don't know, do you use hardware, software? Do you use nothing?
It's software. It's a software. Okay. I used to go through, you know, hardware compression, and I it's just not necessary anymore. I have everything on screen. My board stuff, all the controls, compressor, equalizer, whatnot. But, you know, I put a little bit on there because I'm so picky about background noise and a tinny sound. And plus it helps. If you do voiceover work, let me put it this way. If you don't sound the way you think you're supposed to sound in your headset, it's going to screw you up. You can't
your performance won't be what it should be.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you will find yourself rereading things over. Oh, that didn't sound good. I got to read that again, over and over. And so I put just a touch, because if you put too much, these guys, and that's another thing radio will do for you, or not for you, it will mess you up.
Again.
It works
against you. Yeah.
You're used to sounding like this. I am Mr. Radio, and I am compressed to hell and back. And because that on-air sound sounds great. I wouldn't change it for the world. But the problem is, you're going out over the air. What we do has to be produced. And so if I send a highly compressed or highly EQ'd file back, then there's not much they can do with it on the other side of things.
Mm-hmm.
They'll fuss.
And just to let people know, when I do these podcasts, I want all of my guests to be on their own mic chain. So I have you record on your mic chain, and then I get it back. And the only thing I do is kind of level out some of the peaks.
Yep.
And just to kind of make the RMS, I try to get it into some certain specs, but I don't put anything on. So what people are hearing, the way they're hearing you now is your mic chain.
Well, that's that. I hope it sounds good.
Yeah.
I can only hope.
Yeah, well, me too.
I guess it was. I guess it does. I haven't gotten any complaints, so I'm lucky at this point. Huh?
I don't know what your time frame's like. There's at least three other things that I wanted to get into.
Let's go.
I know you're going to be traveling here. Another thing that people, more and more these days, and more people have to do this, get yourself a good travel setup, a little road rig. What is it you take on the road? You already said the mic, the 27 from Shure, but what all do you take with you?
What is your show rated?
My show is rated, I try not to have I don't want to get the TV.
Okay, never mind. I'll word it a different way then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
I was about to highly, highly compliment a new piece of equipment I just bought. I have been, man, I'm telling you, I have been now for 3 or 4 months, I've been completely revamping everything. New computer systems, new mic, new audio equipment. And there was something, we'll get into this quickly later, but... I needed to have a really good setup for live. Like if a network calls in, like what we're doing here, I need to be able to record my audio, hear them. Everything is in the computer now. There's no external stuff anymore. Everything's in your phone system. Everything's all in the computer. And so you have a way, an efficient way of routing all of that audio around inside. And there wasn't. I bought this massive board from a company I will not mention. They marketed this thing as a, quote, well, now I can't quote it because I can't remember. But they really pushed it as a very able interface. And I'm thinking, it's got 24 channels. I mean, my God, what I could do with 24. Okay, so it gives Windows one stereo in and one stereo out. If your software, which your phone software is, it's not ASIO, it's WSAPI and whatever else it requires on what Windows can recognize to assign an input or an output, like Skype, So I am looking at all these options, how do I do this? And man, I just ran into every kind of roadblock for 3 weeks or so, and I came across this beautiful, beautiful company. I'm telling you, if you want to do broadcasting, if you need to do phone patches with networks, you absolutely must have, not only for your regular studio, but for your portable studio as well, Motu. Motu, mark of the unicorn. I bought the little, the ultralight guy version for my portable studio. The guy, it's a local U.S.-based company, and every time I call, the guy answers the phone with his first name and helps me. I said, I know exactly what you need. Let me send you a registry file, and you just double-click it, install it, and then all of a sudden I had 50 stereo ins and 50 stereo outs, and I can route it inside the system to do anything. Amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. And you're more of a PC guy, I'm getting. You're not a Mac guy. It sounds like you're on Windows, you're on a PC.
I am, it's very simple reason I'm that way is because that's what I learned on. And
sure.
Macs were like five times more expensive at the time than PCs were. And plus, PCs had offered more compatibility, more software options, more everything. So I just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want the learning
curve.
Yeah,
no, that's great.
Yeah, I didn't want the learning curve.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with it. And the what DAW do you work in? What editor or what are you recording?
I use Adobe Audition, and I do the subscription. Yeah. I'm the Adobe Cloud guy because I still have to have my Premiere and my Acrobat and After Effects and all that good stuff. So it's the latest version, CC 2019 Adobe Audition.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. I think a lot of people that we bring it up on this show often, there's absolutely no need to force your way into a DAW, a digital audio workstation that you're not comfortable with. And Audition is really nice for voice actors. It can be as simple as you want it to be. It can also be as complex as you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's highly capable, but I say that not really knowing anything about, how to... I'm totally unfamiliar. I'm a total layperson when it comes to Mac and Pro Tools. So, I'm just telling you, this is what I'm used to, and it seems to be I learn something about it every day because I dabble in multi-track and still love production, and it just...
Yeah.
It seems to always wow me, so...
Yeah, that's cool. Let's get into VO Mob. You've alluded to this throughout the show here a little bit. Full disclosure, I know almost nothing about it. So what is that? What is VO Mob?
We're trying to change that so hopefully people will know what it is. But we're gonna make you an offer you can't refuse. And maybe that was okay. I'd probably lose that audition. But Chad Erickson does a really good job of it. Now we were the guys got together. It was one of the most refreshing things. Promax this past summer, the Station Summit in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And, we call these studios of ours, all of us, we have home studios, and we don't interact really with anybody anymore. You never talk to your TV producers unless there's a problem. You never hear from the radio PD unless there's a problem or he just likes you or you've got a question about a pronunciation. Nobody, you are literally in a sensory deprivation chamber. And so you get to this, when you have your stressful days we talked about earlier, you start feeling like, God, I'll bet you the other guys have got it easy. What am I doing wrong? This just sucks, man. This is terrible. So we all get together in June and we find out that we've all got the same issues. We are not alone, man. And the biggest common thing is we do love what we do. You have to love it. It's you have an opportunity to be creative, and people appreciate you, and they give you, it's the ultimate compliment for somebody to say they like your voice because you didn't go pick it out. If somebody says they like your car, well, you made a choice to buy that kind of car. I didn't choose my voice, so it really is the ultimate compliment. But we said the biggest problem is that it's really just not fun anymore. It's not, and the problem is, if you like something, if you're having fun, a program director that's having fun doing what he's doing, a copywriter that's having fun doing what he's doing, an editor, if they're enjoying it, then you know exactly what that leads to. It's all imaging, and you get the absolute best damn image you can possibly get if everybody's enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, if it's all in the name of fun, let's get together. Let's have this group and we'll all, no real huge mission statement, just quite simply, just a group of guys that have gotten together and said, okay, look, we want to make this business fun again. We want to do some fun stuff and involve our program directors and our creative services director, whoever wants to get in the mix, we'll do podcasts. We actually have a radio stream, fully licensed radio stream. We're in the early stages, haven't really done anything major yet. We've been prepping for WWRS and sort of, putting the foundation in, but it's going to be a lot of fun, man.
And so Well, yeah, how do people, I don't know, how do people interact with it? You said live radio stream. What's on the live radio stream? Like, what's going to be the, you know,
well, again, yeah, nobody's really, yeah, we're not really getting any interaction right now because we haven't really pushed anything except through the Facebook page. And I think people, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I can see where if we wait too much longer to do anything, then people say, okay, well, it was just a quick idea that went away. But no, it's there to do something right. You've got to take the time to really think it through, and you know, really, you know, get together with the other guys and think, okay, what are we going to do? Let's come up with a plan. Right now, the radio station is really just a really cool way of getting our demos out there and us just cutting up with one another. You know,
yeah.
There are plans with a couple of the guys would actually like to do a regular, maybe monthly radio show. Hey, voiceover
and
guys.
Kind of talk about the industry.
Yeah.
Talk about the business. Talk about the industry. Just do like a community. Just to interact with human beings, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, we would take live phone callers, but it would be a music format. But then we would also do podcasts. So we actually have a music format right now, and it's sort of you would recognize it as a modern, you know, top 40 CHR, you know, hit station. But it really is right now just a glorified way of us putting our demos out there.
Well, people should check it out, because I've heard you talk about it a bit.
Yeah, we got an app. We've got an app. It's VO Mob Radio in the App Store. But really, all it is, again, I'm just going to give you the heads up. I mean, at least for another month or so, it's just music and liners from the guys. You can listen to, let's see, it's Steve Stone's in there, Chad Erickson, Mark Maurer, and myself. And we hope to grow, because we're all going to be showing everybody how to party here in a few days, I guess. Trying to anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You can get on a plane soon. You scheduled me in right before you jump on a plane, go to Burbank, and get crazy.
Exactly. We fly out tomorrow. So.
Yeah, there you go. Let me bring up Chris Corley.
Yeah.
It seems appropriate to do that. Everybody's going to mourn him in their own way, and he was a legend. And I'm not going to get, you know, sappy and, you know, I never met Chris in real life. I had him on the podcast, you know, way early on. And anyway, you knew him. I don't know how well, but what do you have to say about Chris?
Well, I'm going to be honest, because I'm very, very paranoid in situations like this, because, you know, people very often you question people's sincerity in really heavy times like this and heavy moments, heavy situations.
Yeah.
Because when somebody, you know, you've been there. A lot of times somebody will pass on or whatever, and people come out of the woodwork and like, yeah, oh, he was such a great guy. I don't want to even, I get so paranoid, even the possibility that somebody would think of me in that way, that I'm very careful. I'm very careful how I say it. But I'm not ashamed to say I really, really liked the guy. I knew of Chris. We have been represented by the same agency for a long time. And I've followed his career. I'm sure he was aware of mine, but we were never close. I would say we didn't even really meet one another until a couple of years ago. But Chris was one of those guys that when I met him, it took 30 minutes, and I felt like we were supposed to compare notes from high school. I mean, that's the way the guy was.
Yeah.
And I think that, I've been married 26 years, and when he told me, it was Vegas 2 years ago, and he told me that his wife had recently passed, and he admitted a few things to me and how bad he felt and where he was, and I thought, man, because I've got this curse of empathy. I can't watch videos of people getting hurt because I can feel it. I might even need stitches. But no, and he was telling me this. It was, I really did put myself in his position. It's like, what a horrific situation. I mean, he's here at Promax, and he's having to continue work, and he's just absolutely in a hole. So that really was what really tied me to him is because he was so close and loved his wife so much. And I thought, man, I get you. So he was with us. He was with us in June, and I think that's the big shocker. And I've talked with the other guys, and I know I talked with John Pleasey a few weeks back, and everybody is really having a tough time dealing with this because they knew that they knew Chris now. I don't know how long each of the guys have known him, but like I said, it doesn't take long to like the guy. 30 minutes, less. So here he is. He became so successful, and now this, and we just saw him. There's that fog that you get in because, oh my God, we were just together, partying together, having a blast, and already, you know, very sad.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things like, you know, how fast it can go.
Yeah.
You know, everybody keep that in mind. It can happen so fast.
You can go you can go out for bread or milk right now and not make it, you know, a mile down the road. It's life is so unpredictable. And I was telling somebody the other day, I said, I don't want to be stupid. I'm not going to eat cake three times a day. But unless a doctor says to me like this, you're going to die in 5 months if you don't change. And if you do change, I guarantee you that you will live another 20 years. Aside from that, I am not going to worry about the hamburger or the extra cup of coffee. Because how many people do you see that are fitness fanatics? They run two, three times a day. They take tons of, you know, their body weight in vitamins, and then they croak at 41. Live.
Yeah, man. Well, without a doubt. Anyway, I wanted to spend a few minutes because he was really important to the industry. You know, like you just said, everything you said.
I don't know how in the hell.
Life, but you knew him, and
I don't know how in the holy hell. I mean, any collection of us are going to fill those shoes, and I'm not just saying that to be nice. It's not. It's not just to be complimentary. The guy was just his technique. I mean, everybody that hears Chris and his work, you're like, people say, maybe I should listen to the way Chris did it and see if I could do like that. He was such a. I saw somebody's post the other. I think Steve Stone posted. He said that Chris was what he set his compass to. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to end on, you know, the down note. I definitely wanted to talk about Mr. Corley.
Yes.
But let's round it out here. We could talk forever, clearly.
I know. It's a lot of fun, man.
A 3-hour show, but
we're so deprived of human interaction.
Yeah. I know. I still have a day job where I see human beings, so I cherish it. Anyway, I don't need to go. This ain't about
me.
Awesome. Give me a key piece of advice. So talk to the younger folk in the voiceover or that are trying to get into the voiceover industry. Something you'd like to tell them on either to attain success or to have a happy life or to, you know, just to do this better.
The younger folks that are getting ready to get into voiceover. I tell you what, let me go around and see me. I'll get you some applications. And I'm trying to be funny here. It's because, take a business.
In other words, don't do it? Are you saying don't do it?
No. I was trying to be funny. They should do it. It is but I will tell you this. Do not go into this business now. If I had not gotten into this business when I did, I am convinced that it would not be a living unless you have unless you prepared yourself with a massive savings account and you have a ton of patience, because there's a lot of work out there. Yeah, there's a lot of work out there. But you have to understand the voiceover industry is being so flooded with so many. Everybody now thinks this is the way that we're going to get rich.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's possible, I guess. It's possible to get rich doing this. But, I mean, man, you've got to start from the beginning. You've got to, it takes forever for your name to get established. And if people don't know you and they're being inundated with 500 other auditions. I mean, you're just a face in the crowd, and that is the toughest part. And when I think about it, like I said, I got a curse of empathy. I'm so glad I'm not just now getting started in this business.
But I think you said something pretty key, patience. I think it does take a lot of patience.
Tons of patience. And don't get upset with your agency unless you're absolutely certain that they're, you know, loafing. Because it is not an agent's job to wave a magic wand and say, I mean, man, if you didn't get the job, it's I'll give you a few possibilities. You either didn't get heard for any number of reasons, or your demo stunk. I mean, that's your audition stunk. It's not because the agency didn't push you. If the agency includes you in an audition, it's because the agency has faith that you might actually get it. And they're not managers, they're agents. And the reason I said that, you didn't ask. I know I have known people trying to get into the business. I try to pay it forward and give some advice, you know, personally here and there. And that's what, you know, they call me back and they say, my agent, I got a sorry agent because they're not getting me this and they're not getting me that. And I'm like, they're not managers, they're agents. You want that? You either have to do your own marketing thing or, you know, find a manager. So.
Right. Yeah, yeah. A lot of work.
It's a very tough business.
Man, I appreciate it. This is
yes,
a great
sir.
Chat. Your website, I'll have it linked, obviously.
Oh, it's ugly.
But you're about to update it, though. Well, maybe not about, but you've got an update in the works.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
It's the update's in the works.
MarkPeoples.com. Just in case they don't know how to spell it, I mean, gosh, they're on a podcast. They're looking at your name, hopefully, right in front of them on their screen. But MarkPeoples.com. So there it is.
You got it.
All right, man. Hey, this is awesome. So we'll keep up, and I just want to say thanks so much for your time. I really enjoyed having you on the podcast.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great day, bud.
Visit RyanDreen.com to subscribe, contact the show, and listen to every episode. Please rate and review the Producers Podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app.
The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.